joining us now, NFL Network, NFL.com, and the Around the NFL podcast, Mark Sessler. Mark, how are you?
Doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing excellent, man. We are at Browns camp. We're in Berea here, day two. The team is scrimmaging right now on the far side of the field from us, so it's a little hard to see what's going on, but it's always good to be at camp for the day. It's a lot of fun, you know?
Absolutely. I was there a couple of years ago, and when Mike Pettine was the coach, and I've been trying hard to get back because we're out in Los Angeles, so we're watching a lot of this right on NFL Network. It would be great to be closer.
Yeah, Mark, when we were spending a lot of the day just talking about Adam Jones, Dez Bryant, and the idea of bringing in some guys that maybe either come with questionable pass or maybe even come with production that might not be as top of where they were when we think about them in their prime. With John Dorsey and trying to build up this roster, is it that imperative that he does it this soon, or does he have the leeway to maybe not take as many chances on questionable character guys like he did in Kansas City to try to get him to be the 6, 7, 8, 9 win team that he wants?
Yeah, I guess the key in Kansas City, the Tyreek Hill, so those guys were game-changing players who were drafted and they were younger and they made an immediate impact. Hill did, for instance, on Kansas City's offense. When you look at Dez Bryant, there's Dez Bryant, if you're a casual fan, you think of Dez Bryant and think, wow, that would be an incredible player to have. There's a reason the Cowboys moved on from Dez Bryant. Part of it was his, reduced speed on the field. Coaches for a couple of years felt like this guy is not able to break away from cornerbacks and dominate the way he used to. But then there was the Dez Bryant experience off the field, which I think was, over time, taxing on that team for sure. So you got to make that measurement. Like, look at this Cleveland locker room, where they were a year ago. It's so different now. And you have guys like Tyrod Taylor, and the leadership, everyone seems to love being around him. There are other players like that, but then you want to talk about bringing in players with a little bit of edge for a team that's had one win over the last 2 years. Hugh Jackson knows Pac-Man very well, and Dorsey has at least some ability to know who Dez Bryant is based on his past. I think you just have to decide, why do we need Dez Bryant if we're truly going to get Josh Gordon back in a couple weeks? It sounds like that's obviously, but there's high confidence that he'll play, and where does Dez Bryant fit into the picture if he does return on time, Josh Gordon?
Yeah, I would think, to me, if they sign Dez Bryant, and I don't think they will, Mark, but if they sign Dez Bryant, that would signal to me that, in fact, they're not as confident that Josh is coming back as they've led people to believe.
Yeah, if we see that happen, then whatever it is the team knows that we don't know, behind the scenes, that's a high indicator, because Dez Bryant isn't a guy you bring in for a couple weeks. It's not a patch. And also, Dez Bryant turned down a lot of money from the Ravens. And he could be sitting out there waiting to find a different type of team that he would envision himself playing for that gets into injury trouble down the road, because that's going to start happening around the league. And is Cleveland somewhere that Dez Bryant would want to go? If there's no offers, yes. But I think he also would want to know, what is my role here and what is going on with Josh Gordon, and when are you going to have... Now, suddenly, if you have Gordon back, you already have one of the best wide receiver rooms in the NFL. So Dez Bryant is an interesting character to add to that mix, because they got some characters in general in that room.
We're talking with Mark Sessler of the NFL Network. Mark, you look at what the Browns have done at quarterback. It was funny. I was saying yesterday that you could make a pretty good argument that the Browns' third quarterback, Drew Stanton, and again, we don't know what Baker Mayfield is yet, but the Drew Stanton, their third quarterback, is as good, if not better, than any quarterback they've probably had in at least 7, 8 years, right? Like, the best quarterback they've had in the last 7, 8 years is probably Brian Hoyer, and Stanton's just as good. So the upgrade at that position with Tyrod and the possibilities of Baker Mayfield is something, really, even though Tyrod is, I guess, somewhat limited as a quarterback, it's still the best room in a long time in Cleveland.
No doubt, and it's so frustrating, I would imagine, for most Browns fans, that you look back to 1999, why did it take nearly two decades to get this part of the team in order? And one thing about Tyrod Taylor, I was lucky enough to go on a trip overseas for the USO this spring, and one of the NFL people attached to it was Rex Ryan. And the one thing he unabashedly would just say, listen, I know it didn't perfectly go well in Buffalo, but he thought the world of Tyrod Taylor, the person, the player, the way that he, led the locker room, his preparation, really the whole Tyrod Taylor experience made a huge fan out of him. And when you hear Hugh Jackson talk, you hear the same exact thing. This guy has done everything we've asked. He's been a great leader. You know, that move came out of nowhere. Everyone knew they were going to take a number one quarterback at the top of the draft. But the Tyrod Taylor maneuver, I thought John Dorsey basically is saying, we're not going to take any chances here or take a rookie and throw him into the fire, which they've done a million times before. You've got options here. And Stanton is, you know, when you have that teacher, the guy that's been around the block, like Josh McCown, for all the ups and downs of Josh McCown's durability, brought real good stability in terms of a quarterback room that was in total chaos for Cleveland in the past. So you have a little bit of everything here, and they've got other options, and they don't need to rush Baker Mayfield. And I think that's just a great situation for Cleveland and will hopefully provide stability.
Yeah, but we understand that Baker still is the franchise and he's still the future. With that said, are you surprised that the relationship between Tyrod Taylor and Baker, again, we're very early, 2 days into training camp, but they already have an RV that they hang out together with. Are you surprised that Tyrod is taking on this mentorship role as strong as he is, knowing that, you know, if he gets benched week 7 or week 8, that hurts him in the long term in his own future prospects in the league?
I think that's the guy he is, because when you hear sort of whispers about Big Ben not wanting to deal with competition, and there's quarterbacks like that all around the league, like, I think that Tyrod Taylor is a competitor, and we know that about Baker Mayfield just by following him on social media and just sort of tracking his story through college and up to being picked by the Browns. He is an ultra competitor, and I think in a way you have to handle it. Is this going to be contentious? Are we going to try to make this thing work? And one of the reasons that Tyrod Taylor fit into this plan is because of the person he is and the leader and mentor that he is. That it really is a team first thing with him. And that's not true of all quarterbacks. Now, all these things get messy if you get into November and there's a switch and you got to try to explain that. But that's just life as a quarterback. I mean, whatever happens in Cleveland, if it requires a switch, if it requires, you know, elevating Baker Mayfield before people thought it, all if they can find consistency at that position, I don't think the typical Browns fan would care how they get there. It has been so long. I mean, one of the Browns quarterbacks that I thought was the best during this return was probably Kelly Holcomb when he had some of his peak performances. But you're going back so long at this point. Mm-hmm. And Tim Couch today, if you put Tim Couch into this offense, would have a different career. They finally have something around the quarterback, it looks like. And you just want to make, hopefully, the coaches can feel that they can develop players, which has been an issue with this coaching staff, and make the right decision when it's time to elevate Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, and I think to that point, yeah, I think we all think Tyrod most likely starts week one. But, Mark, I'm not buying that there's no competition at all, that there's no chance Baker could start, right? You know, like, if he just killed it in the preseason, killed it in training, was so good you couldn't keep him off the field, don't you think there's a chance? I'm not saying, like, listen, you're right. They've put guys in there before they were ready. I don't think anybody's advocating for that. But are you buying he has no chance to start week one?
I wouldn't buy no chance, because I think so much changes between now and week four of the preseason. So much changes. And if you go back and just cycle through where we were at this time a year ago with 6 or 7 teams around the NFL, there's coaches saying a lot of stuff like this. I think Hugh Jackson would like it to play out that way and not want to rush Baker Mayfield. But this is a coaching staff that, number one, cannot get off to a 1-6 or 1-7 start. If you clearly see that one of the quarterbacks is outplaying the other, you have to blow up the plan and say, we have to ride the hot hand. I mean, that's part of being the right coaching staff, is making that right decision. And that's going to be a lot to do with what Todd Haley is comfortable with and what he sees out of the quarterbacks as well.
Mark, you mentioned Josh Gordon. You said a couple weeks. I keep hearing no timetable. I think we're going to have to wait that one out. But are you surprised that the Browns now have left themselves short of a receiver option and banking a lot on somebody that over the past 4 years, nobody can bank anything on for him being there and being ready every single week in, week out?
Yeah, I mean, they must have, you know, I think they're trying to share what they can, but there must be some sort of confidence that this was a step by Gordon to, because there's no failed test. That's just where I start. As far as we know, there's no failed test. Then Gordon is the best end of the spectrum result would be that Josh Gordon has matured enough and has people around him to say, we've identified that, like, it's just a good time to take a break, maybe not have HBO's cameras focused on me for 4 weeks, whatever the reason would be, whatever caused this decision. They must have enough confidence to put out a statement saying how much they support the decision and the person. Now, they're also, when you hear Dez Bryant, you hear this or that, I think sometimes what that is, is the general manager saying, we'll look at anyone. We'll always try to get better. And that's really what general managers do. How serious are they about adding the Dez Bryant until we have knowledge of Gordon's return? That will tell us a lot. If they do nothing, then I would expect Gordon back sooner than later. But they clearly don't. Just from what Dorsey said, I think that there is no absolute hammer-down timetable, which would leave you a little nervous as a Browns fan. Because, to your point, we've been through everything with Josh Gordon you could ever imagine, but very little of it has been on-field production.
We're talking with Mark Sessler, NFL Network, around the NFL podcast. Mark, let's hit on some other things. We were saying before, talking about the AFC, right? Every year we know, usually it's six teams that made the playoffs, don't make it. You look at the AFC in particular, besides New England and Pittsburgh, are you confident in any other team in the AFC saying, this team's definitely going to the playoffs? Because I'm not. Are you?
No, because if you look at, like, I think the Bills, I do believe in the coaching staff there in Buffalo. I think that they've blown the machine up so many times. There is something in place there, but the offense really, truly regressed. I mean, they have really very little a wide receiver. You don't know what's going to happen with LeSean McCoy. Buffalo may not get back there. I'd be shocked if they did. They could be a top five draft pick. And then you look at the Baltimores and the Cincinnati's. I mean, they're always in the mix, but there's not a shoe-in scenario there outside of Pittsburgh. I do think the Jaguars, barring them being injury riddled or Blake Bortles truly falling off the cliff, I think they can coach around the Blake Bortles thing a little bit. That team has so much young talent that I'd be surprised if they didn't get back. And Kansas City, which has been sort of a plug-and-play playoff team for so long, I mean, you've got Patrick Mahomes. Now, he could be a completely different type of quarterback. He is an Alex Smith, and that could go real well. But he's a young quarterback that has to grow, and that defense is not the defense of a couple years ago. So the AFC, where the NFC feels like if they wanted to reseed the playoffs, you might get 10 NFC teams in there. The AFC feels very wide open for new blood to come in and make a difference.
Mark, this might be challenging for you, but AFC North quarterbacks, what do you rank 1 through 4? Is Joe Flacco ahead of Tyrod Taylor?
Well, it's interesting because, John Harbaugh had both of those quarterbacks on his roster for so long, and we never saw Tyrod Taylor get a chance, even when Flacco went through some real ups and downs. And Flacco, at where he is in his age, if we get to Flacco from last year where anything happens with that back, he was a statue in the pocket and really struggled. I mean, I would put, obviously, Roethlisberger is heads and tails number one.
Mm-hmm.
Flacco's experience to me, just the fact that he's been mostly durable and trustworthy, I'd put him a little bit above Tyrod Taylor, but there, to me, that's sort of a coin flip. And from the Andy Dalton experience, I just don't understand why the Bengals, despite that 2015 season where he looked like an MVP candidate, I don't know why they've never decided to go out and even explore upgrading that position, because I feel like there's a ceiling there with Andy Dalton. I think Tyrod Taylor is on the perfect team right now to have his best season, though. And so he may wind up as the 1A to Flacco's 1B by the end of the season.
Well, Mark, we appreciate the time, man. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks. It was fun. Good luck.